I'm starting to record a second lecture for today. This lecture will be on Handout 9. Handout 9 is about the structure of words. We're going to look at how English and Nuchanoff put words together. We're going to learn some terms for the parts of words and look at different strategies for building new words. Let's go through some of the definitions at the top of the handout, starting with morphology. Morphology is the study of word structure. So far in this course, we've talked about phonetics and phonology, which have to do with language sounds. Now we're getting into words, morphology. When we looked at the sounds that words are made up of, we had several words for those: consonants, vowels, phonemes, allophones. These terms have to do with sounds. Now we're looking at the pieces of words. Words can be divided into meaningful parts called morphemes. A morpheme is a minimal, meaningful part of a word. One of the first words we looked at in our second or third handout was a couple of words for cutting. One was chia, which means cutting. Chia usually means cutting fish. And another was chinush, chinush, which means totem pole. And we saw that chia and chinush have the same root. That chi is the root of the word and means something like cut. But they have different endings, right? Chia has the ending ya, chinush has the ending nush. We call these meaningful parts of a word morphemes. So chi is a meaningful part of a word. It's part of a word, it's smaller than a word, but it has a meaning, and that meaning is to cut. A root is a special kind of morpheme. Every word has a root, which is the central or most important morpheme. In the words chia and chinus, chi is the root. I'm going to go down a little bit to morphological process. A morphological process is a change in a word's shape that changes its meaning. So we might take the English word sing and note that we have the different forms sing, sang, sung. When I change those words, you can hear that they're all related, right? They have the same root, but those are different forms of that word. And I'm changing the word, in this case by changing a vowel. That is one kind of change, which is called ablaut. Sing, sang, sung. We're going to be learning about ablaut as well as compounding, reduplication, and affixation. And these are the main morphological processes that we will consider. I think it'll be much easier to understand these with some examples. So let's move forwards and look at some examples of these. In 1 and 2, we have a couple of sentences of Nuchanoff. Ya akuk haksiya. Do you love me? Ya akuk haksiya. Ya akukwa suwa. I love you. Ya akukwa suwa. You probably recognize these, but you might find that they sound a little odd because these are in Barkly Sound dialect, whereas all of you, I believe, are learning the Central dialect. The important thing here about these two sentences is that even though each of these sentences has just two words in it, they have several meaningful parts. Can you identify any of the morphemes in these sentences? Name a part of one of these words that is smaller than a word but is still meaningful. So we just identified a couple of the morphemes in examples 1 and 2. These are nearly identical, ya akuk haksiya, ya akuk wahsuwa. But if we compare just the first word of 1 and the first word of 2, we see that they both have ya akuk, but one ends in hak and one ends in ah. So that hak ending in 1 makes it a question about you, whereas the ah ending in 2 makes it a statement about I. We can say that these These morphemes, the huk and the ah, are bound morphemes. This means that they can't appear by themselves. They have to be an ending on something else. Do you see any morphemes in here that are free? That is, a single morpheme, a single meaningful part, that can occur by itself as a word. Whereas some of the morphemes in these sentences are bound, they have to be pronounced with something else. We also have some free morphemes. So the morpheme siya, which means me, and the morpheme suwa, which means you, are free morphemes. They're meaningful parts and they can be said by themselves. Ya'uk is also a free morpheme. It means pain or hurt, and it can be said by itself, though you can't tell that just from these examples. Let's talk about affixes. The most common way of building new words is by putting an affix on a stem. If you go up to the top, you'll see that an affix is a morpheme that is added to a stem. A stem is one or more morphemes to which more morphemes can be added. Take a look at the English examples in three. Happy, happiness. We say that happy is a free morpheme. Ness is an affix. Ness cannot be said by itself. Happy can be said by itself. It is a free morpheme. Ness cannot be said by itself. It is a bound morpheme. Specifically, it is an affix. In this case, the affix ness is joined to the stem happy, which gives us happiness. Take a look at the next one. Fasten, unfasten. Fasten, unfasten. What's the stem here and what is the affix? Affix is a general term that means any bound morpheme that has to be attached to a stem. But we have more specific kinds of affixes. We have prefixes, which go at the beginnings of their stem, and we have suffixes, which go at the end of a stem. There are also such things as infixes. Infixes go inside a stem. Both English and Nuchanolth have infixes. Nuchanolth has a few. English has very few. An example of an infix in English is the way Homer Simpson puts muh inside words. You know, Homer Simpson likes to say absolutely instead of absolutely. Also in English slang, we can say that something is unfrickin' believable. We can stick frickin' inside the word. These are examples of infixes in English. So we have at least three kinds of affixes: prefixes, suffixes, and infixes. Let's take a look now at some Nuchanolth data. Take a look at the words in number four. Can anyone identify a stem and an affix in these data? Shall we read them together? Let's read through them, just for practice. I'll read across the rows. Uchkak, uchkmis, uchkshik, slitwahak, slitwahmis, slitwahshit, ta'il, tamis, tapit, ti, tinak, ti eats, kusha, kushnak, kush eats, kwapi, kwapiknak, kwapits. Now back to my question. In these Nuchanolth data in four, can you identify a stem and an affix? Very good. You're exactly right about that. English has both prefixes and suffixes, but affixes in Nuchanolth are overwhelmingly suffixes. So usually in Nuchanolth, When we're dealing with an affix, it is almost always a suffix that goes at the end of a stem. Veronica used ta-ish, tamis as examples, and from these words we seem to see that ta is the stem, and that's the part that means sick, ta. And then ta can be pronounced with various suffixes, like ish in ta-ish and mis in tamis, that change the meaning of the word a little bit, but it's still about sick. I also asked, is ta a bound or a free stem? And Veronica said it is correctly said that it is a bound stem. It has to be said with something else. Ta can't be said by itself. It has to have at least one suffix in order to be pronounced. Do you see any free stems in these data? Any free stems that can appear by themselves without an affix? Darlene correctly pointed out that T is an example of a free stem. It's a meaningful stem to which suffixes can be added, and it can also appear by itself. That makes T a free stem, whereas T is a bound stem. We were just looking at examples of affixation. Affixation is when we build a new word by adding an affix to a stem. Now we're going to look at examples of reduplication. Reduplication is another way of building new words. Let's read the Nechanoff examples together in five, just to get practice with how they sound. Nuke, nuke, nuke. Atikshit. A-a-tika. Soup, it's miss. Susup, it's cook. These examples demonstrate reduplication. If you look at the beginning of the handout, you'll see that reduplication is defined as making a new word by doubling all or part of the stem. In five, we have examples of both full reduplication, where the entire stem is doubled, and also partial reduplication, where only part of the stem is doubled. Can someone name an example of full reduplication, where the entire stem is doubled? Nuke nuke is an example of full reduplication. We double the entire stem. Nuke becomes nuke nuke. Can someone give an example of partial reduplication? A-a-tika is an example of partial reduplication. What is the stem in a-a-tika? The stem is atik, the stem is atik, and in the word a-a-tika, we double just the first consonant and vowel of the stem, not the entire stem. So you should see by now that we are using hyphens to separate the morphemes of a word, that is, to separate the meaningful parts of a word. So a-a-tika, for example, consists of a stem, a-tik, a reduplicative prefix, a, and a suffix, a. Do you see that? So we have three morphemes in a-a-tika: a stem, a reduplicative prefix, and a suffix. Similarly, in susupitskuk, what's the stem in susupitskuk? Yes, the stem in susupitskuk is supits. We have the suffix kuk and the reduplicative prefix su. Any sequence of morphemes to which more morphemes can be added is a stem. No, nuke nuke is used in all dialects, but and so is a-a-tika, but susupitskuk is a central northern word. I don't think it's used in Barkly Sound. We are learning some important terms that we're going to use to describe the parts of words, how words are put together, how we build new words. We've learned that meaningful parts of words are called morphemes. So Morphemes can be smaller than a word. They can also be independent words themselves. And we have special names for certain kinds of morphemes. A stem is any sequence of morphemes to which more morphemes can be added. The root is the central morpheme of a word. Affixes are bits that are added to stems. So now, with these terms under your belt, take a look at the data in 6 and 7 and see if you can tell me how many stems are in the word in 6. This is uyakhmisnakhak. Uyakhmisnakhak. This is a one-word sentence. Uyakhmisnakhak. First of all, how many morphemes are in this sentence? So far, we've looked at two kinds of morphological processes, affixation and reduplication. Now let's look at a third kind of word building, which is compounding. The words in 8 are some examples of English words that are compounds. Compounds are made out of two roots. We put together two roots to make a new word. So, for example, week is a root. It can stand by itself. Day is a root, but we put them together and we get a new word, weekday. Pig and pen are roots, and we can put them together to make pig pen. English really likes making new words by compounding. Neutronolf does not. There are no compound words in Neutronolf. Neutronolf likes to make new words with affixation and reduplication. Affixation and reduplication, very common in Neutronolf. Compounding, not used at all in Neutronolf. If Neutronolf liked compounding, then we might be able to say something like quis chukup for snowman, right? Because quis means snow, chukup means man, but Neutronolf does not put two roots together. It doesn't like to do that. And that's probably because Neutronolf has so many useful suffixes. It has enough suffixes to do all the word building it needs. It doesn't also need to do compounding. I don't know a Neutronolf word for snowman, but if I had to guess, I might call it quishtin chukup, maybe. Htin is a suffix that means made out of, so quishtin could mean made out of snow. And then we could say quishtin chukup or quishtinum, maybe. Might be a good way to do it. Quishtinum would be one word with two suffixes, and that's the kind of word that Neutronolf likes to make. An example of this is the name of Snotboy. The hero who came from his mother's snot. In some dialects, his name is Einthtin, which literally means made out of snot. We just reviewed some joking Neutronolf translations of English words. Tlpa einit for hot dog, chumas tichma for sweetheart, tatustana for Starbucks. The reason these sound silly is because Neutronolf does not make words this way. English loves to make words this way by compounding two roots. Neutronolf does not. So these are not good Neutronolf words. They're clumsy translations of English words. Neutronolf also builds some words just by changes in vowel length. Listen to the words in 9. Let's say them together. Washit, washit, mitshit, mitshit, tumakstut, tumakstut. Do you see how the difference in vowel length changes the meaning of the word? And this, among other things, shows why it's so important to get the vowel length right in Neutronolf words, because you can change the meaning of the word or render it unrecognizable if you don't pronounce the vowel lengths properly. We're starting again after our break. In this handout, we've been looking at different kinds of word building. A technical term for word building is a morphological process. A morphological process is a way of changing a word in order to change its meaning. Some of the word building processes that we've looked at so far are affixation, reduplication, and compounding. Now we're going to look at a fourth type of word building, which is ablaut. Ablaut means changing one of the vowels in a word in order to change the meaning of a word. In 10, we have some examples of English words with ablaut. Let's read through these. Sing, sang. Stare, stared. Break, broke. Warn, warned. Girl, girls. Man, men. Foot, feet. Idea, ideas. Now, what these all have in common is we've changed the meaning of a word by adding something, but some of them represent ablaut and some represent affixation. Can someone give me an example of a pair of words here that demonstrates ablaut? So we just looked at a few examples from 10. These are examples where we turn a present tense verb into past tense, or we turn a singular noun into a plural noun. And what's interesting about this is that in English, we do this both by affixation and by ablaut. So sing sang is an example where the past tense is formed by ablaut, but warn warned is an example where past tense is formed by affixation. If you need to double check the meanings of any of these technical terms, go check the beginning of the handout, and that you'll probably find a definition there. So if we look at the beginning of handout 9, you'll see a definition of ablaut, which is making a new word by changing one or more of its vowels. Both English and Nuchonal do use ablaut, but English uses it a lot more. Now, in exercise 28, we're going to look at how Nuchonal forms plural words. These examples show us that Nuchonal plurals can be formed by affixation, by reduplication, and by changes in vowel length. So, for each of these plural words, you're going to say which of these processes is used, and sometimes more than one is used. Take the first pair of words in 11. Me'itqats, me'itqats minh. Me'itqats is one boy. Me'itqats minh is two or more boys. How is the plural formed here? Is it by affixation, reduplication, or a change in vowel length? We just looked at two examples from 11. You'll be working on these for exercise 28. What you're asked to do here is look at the plural forms and say whether they're formed by affixation, reduplication, or changes in vowel length. First, we looked at me'itqats, me'itqats minh. Here, the plural is formed by affixation, specifically suffixation. Then we looked at qu'as, qu'tqu'as. This plural is a little more complicated. It is formed by reduplication and by affixation, specifically infixation.